Joseph dies. In the Haftarah we're about to read, David dies. And yet it's called Vayechi, which means, and he lived. Just like in the Parsha where Sarah dies, it's called Chaye Sarah. And that's because, in part, obviously, for righteous people, their deeds live on beyond them. And also because we make the mistake sometimes, when someone dies, of focusing more on their last moments or their death than we do on their life. And so instead of calling it Jacob's death and making the focus about his death, it says Vayechi, and he lived. So since I don't want to make that mistake about the book of Bereshit and focusing only on the end now that it is finishing, because this is the end of Bereshit, instead I want to take us on a very quick tour to remind us of the book we've just read. Because if you're anything like me, if you read a book slowly, by the time you get to the end, you've forgotten the beginning. And you don't really want to go back and read the beginning again because there are all these other books that are waiting for you. And so you get disconnected. So let me just remind you about the beginnings and the middle of the book that we are ending. When we started around Rosh Hashanah time, and actually a little bit Simchat Torah, a little after that, we read about the creation of the world. And immediately upon the creation of the world and the loss of paradise, that is Adam and Eve getting kicked out of the Garden of Eden, we started to read about the struggle of human beings to make it in this world. And what you may or may not remember is we read about the beginnings not only of cities with the Tower of Babel, but the beginnings of music, the beginnings of tools, all the things that human beings now take for granted, and how at one time they didn't exist. Although some things apparently existed longer than we thought. You read about that 3,700-year-old wine cellar they just found in ancient, before Israel, in Canaan, which means that some things are very, very old indeed. Once that was established, that is, the world was more or less created, there was a destruction, the time of Noah, and a rebuilding, because God's first attempt to make the world... Sorry. I know it's not his fault, but yes. So, after the destruction with Noah, there's a rebuilding, and then, of course, with the Tower of Babel is the recognition that the new world is also not a successful world. That human beings will always misbehave. They did before the destruction, they did in the garden, and they do, by the way, throughout the Torah and throughout history. That there's no way of making people perfect. And one of the nice things about the Torah, unlike some of the history of the 20th century, is the Torah is not utopian. It never says that people can be made perfect. Because as we know now, with the history of the 20th century, after Nazism and communism, the attempt to make things perfect ends up in there being much, much worse. So the Torah is not a utopian ideal. It's not a perfectionist ideal. We're no longer in the Garden of Eden. It's about how to make things not perfect, but better. And that's what God can't seem to do with the whole world. So God decides to do the same thing that a teacher does when a teacher pulls a couple of students out and says, look, the class is a mess. I want you guys to behave nicely so I can point at you as examples. And maybe if you behave well, everybody will listen to you. So God pulls Abraham and Sarah aside and says, I want to make a representative people, and maybe they can be better than the people around them. What we now know that God didn't know is they're no better than everybody else, and it's still a struggle to get people to behave. Again, please, you're right there, okay? Parents, somebody, anyone, help me. If they're yours, go right ahead. It's just as difficult to get Jews to behave as it is to get everyone else to behave. And therefore, God decides with this representative family that it's important to train them, to teach them, to give them experiences and laws that will aid them in behaving. So first they have this revelation that is given to Abraham that is a promise. Because one of the ways you get people to behave is giving them rewards. So God says to Abraham that you and your children's children will get this land and will be good and everything will be well, and it's a land that is flowing with milk and honey, and all you have to do is follow my laws. So Abraham has a child, but he doesn't have a child with Sarah. Remember, he has a child first with Ishmael. That's not the one that's going to follow, so he has to have another child. This one, the second one, Isaac, is the one who's going to carry on. But here we discover again that the unit for carrying on goodness is a family. And families are imperfect units. They don't work well. They work better than not having a family, but they don't work well. So with Abraham and Sarah, there's a problem of Isaac and Ishmael. With Isaac and Rebekah, there's a problem of Jacob and Esau. With Jacob, obviously, and starts off already at the top, right, with Leah and Rachel, there's a problem with all of his children and Joseph. So again and again and again in the book of Bereshit, we're shown that God first tries a people, then tries a family, and can't even get that right. And so this constant struggle to make things better inside the nuclear unit is really the story of Bereshit. And the recognition that it will never be perfect, but it does get better. Remember I mentioned last week that the blessing that Jacob gives to Ephraim and Manasseh is the first time that a younger child is blessed before an older child and it doesn't start a fight. Right? With Ishmael and Isaac, obviously, one gets thrown out of the house. With Jacob and Esau, one wants to kill each other. With Joseph and his brothers, they sell him into slavery. But when Jacob makes it clear that he's blessing the younger instead of the older. And how does he make it clear? Because he doesn't ask, remember, Joseph puts Manasseh, the older one, on his right hand and Ephraim on his left. Rather than asking them to switch, which would be the natural thing to do, he crosses his hands so that everyone can see that he's blessing them wrong, so to speak. And he still does it in order to emphasize both that he's blessing the younger and for us to see that for the first time, the younger takes it and doesn't get upset. Once that happens, then Jacob can bless all the other children, which is what he does. And the story of Bereshit ends with the death of Jacob and then the death of Joseph. And now all the families and the family sagas have basically been brought to an end. I mean, there are going to be lots of families in the rest of the Torah, but it's more about the people than it is about families. So God started with one person or two people, Adam and Eve, gradually embraces a family, and when God has made as much stability and shalom by it as you can in a family, which is never perfect, right? It's never going to be ideal. It's never going to be a family with no fighting and no tension and no arguing, but at least two brothers get blessed and accept and appreciate the blessing without fighting with each other, then we're ready now for Jacob to bless his other children and turn them from individuals into tribes. Because it's in this parsha that the tribes are mentioned for the first time. Before this, there's no mention of tribes. It's only now, because once you have 12 tribes, then you can have a people and you can go on to Shemot and the story, Exodus, the story of slavery and freedom and receiving the Torah. But if you look at the whole arc of the book, it helps us understand it better. Starts with individuals, moves to families, and from families to now to tribes. And then the tribes will coalesce into a people. But the same themes, I just want to close with this, the same discouraging human themes will not go away. That is, there will still be tensions, difficulties, fights, breaks with each other. And you can see this most beautifully. I said I was going to close with that, but I got to just say this. You can see this most beautifully in the Haftarah. David, the great king of Israel, the ancestor of the Messiah, Melech Chai V'Kayam, right? David Melech Yisrael, the one that we revere, he's dying. And what does he say to Solomon? He says some nice stuff about how you should walk in God's ways and so on. But then he tells him who to kill. This guy offended me. I never got him. Solomon, I just want you to remember, I couldn't get him. And I promised him I wouldn't hurt him. That's all I'm saying. Right? And sure enough, if you read, I mean, we don't have it in this morning's parsha, but everyone that David warns Solomon about, Solomon manages to get. So the point is, it never ends, the conflict, the division in the human heart. Not in individuals, not in families, not even at the very last moments. We're always complicated creatures. And I will just close by saying, we are complicated and divided creatures. And the first thing that we learn about ourselves is we are B'Tselem Elohim, in God's image. So if we're so complicated and divided, what does that say about the one in whose image we are? Right? We always think of God as somehow one, unified and simple, but maybe God has a very complex personality. So with that, let's bring everybody in.